So, just a reminder that Patanjali was obviously a great man, giving us three different sciences. We always talk about the body, mind, and the speech, right? So he gave us a science for each of the three, to purify the body, mind, and the speech. Okay. For the body, he gave us Ayurveda, all the medicine. For the speech, he was the most authoritative commentator on the Sanskrit grammar, called Mahabhashya. And for mind, he gave us the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Okay, so he's credited with three of the most important sciences that we know of. Okay, so what we've been doing here is to study the Yoga Sutras in kind of a sequential fashion. And last time what we did was we concluded the discussion on the eight limbs of yoga. Okay, so we studied the eight limbs of yoga, and we spent almost, I think, 6 to 8 sessions on the eight limbs of yoga. And last week was our last. Anybody here last week, last session?
Mm-hmm. I was.
You were here. You were not here, any of you?
No.
You missed, yeah. So what we'll do now is to go backwards. You know, we did the chapter 2, you know, where the eight limbs of yoga mentioned. That's toward the last kind of a third of the chapter is all the eight limbs of yoga. And now we're going to go back to the beginning of chapter 2 to start discussion on the theory of klesha, karma, reincarnation, the yoga philosophy, which is based on Sankhya philosophy. So there is a lot of discussion on the Sankhya philosophy in chapter 2, and that's what we will try to work on. Okay. And we'll see how it goes. It's not always easy to understand some of the concept of Sankhya, but we'll do our best. Okay? Anything that you want me to start with? Is everyone comfortable with the Yoga Sutras in general? I think some of you have been here before. Overall concepts of Yoga Sutras, you're all familiar with that, right?
I've heard about Sankhya philosophy, but
that's okay. Well, Sankhya, you know, there are very briefly, you know, there are 6 philosophical streams in India, right? They're called darshana. Darshana is the Sanskrit word for philosophy. Okay, so these 6 represent 6 different streams of philosophical thinking, you can say, in the Indian context. What are these 6 darshanas? Anybody remember the 6 names? No?
Vedanta
is one of them, yes.
Yoga
is one of them, obviously.
Sankhya.
Yoga, Sankhya, and there are 2 related ones are Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Those are the 2 which are somewhat related to each other. Yoga and Sankhya are somewhat related to each other, quite a bit. And then Vedanta and Mimamsa, they are related to the Vedas, basically. So Mimamsa represents the ritualistic part of the Vedas, and Vedanta refers to the philosophical part of the Vedas, based on the Upanishads. That's the Vedanta part. Anta means end, so it's the end part of Vedas, which is the Upanishads, and the philosophy that has been kind of taken out of the Upanishads, that's called the Vedanta philosophy. Okay. Alright, so these are the 6 darshanas, 6 different streams of Indian philosophy. And yoga is, to a large extent, based on the Sankhya philosophy. So the basic tenets of yoga are from the Sankhya philosophy. Okay. So And chapter 2 has a fairly good discussion on the Sankhya philosophy. All right? So let's try to go through this part now. Okay, so in the... I'm just writing here what we did in the first chapter. So the definition of yoga was given in the first chapter. Does everyone remember the definition of yoga? Sanskrit definition?
Yogaschitta vritti nirodha,
which means that yoga by definition is the control. Nirodha is control, restraint, you know, submission and things like that. So control of the chitta vrittis. Vrittis are the fluctuations of the mind, all the changes, all the perturbation, all the thought processes that go on in the mind. That's vritti. And so the definition of yoga is the ability to control the fluctuations of the mind field. Okay, so that's yoga by definition. And in the chapter 1, we also went through the understanding of the five vrittis. There are five vrittis defined in chapter 1. Okay, those are the kind of broad categories of how the mind can be distracted, disturbed, etc. And does anybody remember any of the vrittis? Five vrittis. How are they defined in the first chapter? What are the five vrittis? Oh, I have them. Okay, read them out.
Right knowledge, wrong knowledge, imaginary knowledge, deep sleep, and memory.
Okay, but I'm looking for the Sanskrit word for this. Okay. Pramana. Pramana. Pramana is right knowledge. Okay. And then Viparyaya. Viparyaya is wrong knowledge, confused knowledge, so to say. That's Viparyaya. Vikalpa. Vikalpa is imaginary knowledge.
Trump's universe.
What's alternate facts?
Kellyanne Conway Trump.
He's talking about because
Kellyanne Conway Trump spokesperson sometimes says alternative facts.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Political reference.
Oh, I see. Political reference. Wasn't aware of that.
Nidra.
Nidra and Smriti. Okay. So pramana, viparyaya, vikalpa, nidra, and smriti. Those are the five broad categories of how the mind can be disturbed or what can bring changes to the mind. Any one of those five can bring changes to the mind. And therefore, the idea is to be able to still the mind. We have to understand how the mind can get distracted and what to do with the mind to keep it calm, to keep it serene and stable, peaceful, etc. So that's the whole purpose of yoga. So we went through the five vrittis, and then what did we do? The means to control the vrittis, we went through these two activities in the chapter 1. What are the two things that we were recommended? Abhyasa and Vairagya. Okay. So I'm just going to go through a very, very brief kind of overview of what the Abhyasa and Vairagya are. What's Abhyasa?
Study.
Practice. Abhyasa is practice. And there's a definition of Abhyasa which was given in the chapter 1. Three attributes, three characteristics of Abhyasa. Those are number 14. Come on.
Blank. Start me out.
Oh. Satu.
Satu Dirga Kala Nairantarya Satkar Sevita.
Very good. She has memorized all the way up to 45. So,
wow.
So it's pretty incredible.
Put them in order, though. If you ask me one in the middle, it's hard. Just start at the beginning.
Yeah. So, dirghakala means for a long period of time, very long period of time. Nairantarya, nairantarya. Antar means gap. Gap. Interruption, breakage, that's antar. Distance also is an antar. Nairantarya means no gap. Nairantarya. So long time, nairantarya means no gap. And satkara sevitaha. Satkar means the ability, satkar means basically just devotion. Satkar means devotion or trust, faith, confidence. You know, those are the kind of loose words that's satkar. And asevitaha means practiced. Asevitaha is practice. So when you practice something for a long period of time without interruption and with a sense of trust, faith, devotion, you know, all that stuff, then it says dridabhumihi. Dridabhumi means it gets very firmly established in itself. Dridabhumihi. Okay, so the practice becomes firmly established only when you do these three attributes of the practice. Now, what are we trying to practice? Whatever it happens to be in life that we want to practice, for the purpose of yoga, right? It's the practice of the eight limbs of yoga, etc., etc.
Satkar
means devotion.
Devotion,
respect. Yeah. Satkar has gone into our.
Some of them, so that's why. You said lots of meaning, right?
Lots of meaning, depending on the context. And then in individual vernacular languages, the meaning gets modified. So the same word might mean something else in Sanskrit, something else in Hindi, and something else in Gujarati. The same word. Okay. So satkar might mean differently in Gujarati than it means in Hindi. Yeah, same thing. Felicitation, respect, same. You do felicitate out of respect, basically. Okay, so that's the abhyasa part. So it, and what's long term? When we say dirghakala, what is that? How long?
Long as it takes.
Mm-hmm. How long does it might take?
Many a lifetime.
That's many a lifetime. So it's not just one lifetime. Because, you know, in chapter 2 we are going to understand the concept of the reincarnation, rebirth and all that. So that's all talked about. And it says that you have to keep practicing for not just this life, but continue it on. So that's the the whole practice, a whole concept of practice, abhyasa. And what's vairagya?
Detachment,
dispassion, non-attachment. Okay, so you have to understand both these concepts, non-attachment as well as detachment. Okay, because if you're already attached to something, you have to detach yourself. If you're attached to your cup of coffee at 7 a.m., then you have to detach yourself. But currently, if you don't smoke a cigarette, don't get attached to it. That's non-attachment. Okay, so don't get attached. And if you are already attached, detach. Okay, so that's become dispassion, totally dispassionate about everything. No attachment. Raga, no dvesha. Now,
is vairagya similar to sannyas?
Yeah, eventually, that's what sannyas eventually leads to, is vairagya.
Doesn't there also mean that you were, I don't want to say enjoying, but the practice is so much a part of your being and your life that you're not doing this for the end result or the attachment of what it's going to get to.
Yes.
But it's so much a part of how you want to live your life.
That's right.
That you enjoy it like this.
That's right.
Whether you get the end result is not that important to you.
That's right. It's not in your hands. What the end result is not in our hands. Okay. So there's a very famous saying in Bhagavad Gita, which is quoted almost universally. You want to repeat that?
Karma neva adhikaraste na phaleshu kadachan.
That means, it's a very beautiful statement. Karmani. Karmani means in the actions. Karmani. And adhikara means you are right. There's no, you don't have a right. No. You have a right only to do your duty. Karmani means your duty, your actions. And adhikara means right. You only have right to your duty. Karmanyev adhikara te. Te means yours. Okay? Na phaleshu kadachana. Phaleshu. Phaleshu means in the fruits of whatever you're doing, in the outcome of what you're doing, you don't have any right on that whatsoever. It's a very famous Gita shlok. And especially if you go to India, even in the offices, in the temples, in school buildings, they will have, you know, this statement printed there on the walls of the offices, and I've seen even in schools and everywhere. So that's exactly what you were saying. You know, we just need to do things. You know, our job is to just do the abhyasa. What comes out as a result of that, that's it. Let it be.
It is what it is.
Hmm?
It is what it is.
It is going to be what it is, yes. We cannot control it. So but the concept of vairagya, Patanjali breaks it into two levels. One he calls the lower level of vairagya, the other is the higher level of vairagya. Okay. What's the lower level of vairagya? That has to do with the vairagya, or the detachment from your attachment to the five senses. You may be too attached to some food, some sense of smell, things like that. Okay. Or even, not just, but you can go beyond that. You may be attached to something that you read in the Vedas. If you do this, you'll go to heaven, and you get attached to that. Okay? There are so many things they say. If you do this, you'll get this result. If you do this, you'll get a promotion. If you do this, you'll get married. You know, and you get attached to that. And if that doesn't happen, you get miserable. That's the kind of attachment they're talking about. And Patanjali calls this the lower level of vairagya, when you can...
How much does that attachment combine with expectation? Like, what if you're not attached to it, but you almost have, like, the expectation, or is that the same thing?
Same thing, yeah. That's the same thing. Expectation is because of attachment. Otherwise, why would you have expectation if you don't have any attachment? Right? It's the same thing. Okay? And then he says there is something which is even the higher level of attachment. You know, he talks about the three gunas. Does anybody remember the three gunas?
Sattva,
rajas, and tamas. They are the entities that create all the problems, that create all the changes that are going on in our mind. These are the three gunas, because these three gunas keep changing their dominance from time to time. And depending on that, our desires, our emotions, our feelings, our thoughts, they all keep changing. And therefore, what Patanjali says is that eventually you want to go and become what's in our texts, they call it gunatita. Gunatita. Atita means beyond. So you go beyond the three gunas. That means you have to transcend any attraction or any influence from the three gunas. When you do that, then you are in the ultimate state of of non-attachment, ultimate state. And that's the state that he calls the higher level of vairagya. So there's lower vairagya and there's the higher vairagya. Okay? So those are the two things that were mentioned in chapter 1. Okay? All right. So now we'll start to understand these sutras from chapter 2. All right? So, like we always do, we go through the Sanskrit first and we'll read the Sanskrit first, so you repeat after me one word at a time, okay? And then we'll see what it means. Tapa,
Tapa.
Swadhyaya,
Swadhyaya,
Ishvara Pranidhanani,
Ishvara
Kriya Yoga.
Kriya Yoga.
So one more time. Tapa.
Tapa.
Swadhyaya.
Swadhyaya.
Ishvara Pranidhanani.
Ishvara Pranidhanani.
Kriya Yoga.
Kriya Yoga.
So there are three things here. Tapa, then Swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhana. These are the three activities or three things that represent that together are known as Kriya Yoga. That's Patanjali's statement here. Okay? It's just by definition. Okay? The definition of Kriya Yoga is the practice of these three. Okay? What is tapa?
Accepting.
Austerity. Austerity and toughening up, basically. I call it toughening up. So you do things which...
Self-control,
restraint, self-control, and putting yourself through controlled hardship so you become tougher, physically, mentally, emotionally. The idea being that we want to become tough enough so that we can withstand all the dualities of life that we are faced with. Dualities of life. Good and bad, ugly, handsome, you know, honor, dishonor, truthful, untruthful, etc. We're faced with dualities all the time, every step of the life. Can we face those dualities without getting, you know, down? Okay? That's the purpose of tapas. Tapas or tapaha. Okay?
Swami Sajidananda says accepting pain as purification. Do you agree with that? That's hard to grasp.
Not very comfortably, but...
That's much clearer.
Yeah. What did he say? Accepting pain as?
Accepting pain as purification.
So well, you know.
It
gets there, yeah.
It gets there, but yeah, it seems easier.
It gets there, yeah. Yeah. Sturdy discipline, self-discipline.
Some of the people who, in this mythical stories, people who are doing tapa is they are going to forest, standing on one leg, with, you know, doing hands like this for 12 years. That is, and that's exactly, you know, toughening
up, basically.
Yeah.
No, but that gets there. Essentially, you know, it's similar things. Yeah. Okay. Anything that can toughen us up, you know, people think of. For example, going on a fast, for example, or having a periodic fast, that's part of tapa. You know, you decide on something and then you stay with it. That's tapas.
So when you do this tapa, normally people will do it with an objective.
Right.
And is that okay or when in the Kriya Yoga sense? Or, I mean, should I consider this still a tapa because my objective could be dieting or weight loss, and for that I'm fasting, for example. Is that still?
No. Fasting is, you know, weight loss is a different thing, you know. We're not talking of weight loss here. This is all geared toward calming the mind eventually. The whole purpose of yoga is to calm the mind. Whether fasting is a part of that, that's a different story. Okay?
It'd be like trying to stop yourself from more worrying so much about things?
Yeah. Worrying about what?
Anything. Your children, your spouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the idea. Because that
you
comes
say,
from...
I'm not going to go there.
That comes from attachment. That comes from attachment. That worry and then anxiety, etc., that comes from attachment.
Yeah, it's control of mind by which you control all the senses and everything.
Right. Okay, so tapas. Okay. And, you know, there are other things people do, for example, like I was mentioning fasting, you know, there's one fast that is mentioned, Chandra. Chandrayana. So, what they do is, you know, depending on the moon's phases, they eat food depending on the moon's phase. So, what they claim is, on the first day of the moon's phase, when it is dark night, you eat nothing. On the second day, you know, one spoonful of grain. On the second day, third day, two spoonfuls of grain. On the 15th day, 15 spoonfuls of grain. And then come down slowly with the same phase. That's called Chandrayana fast, upavas.
For what?
For tapas. For making yourself tough, mentally, physically, and stronger, and lose weight. All that.
Those are side benefits.
So these are part of the niyamas also.
Yes. We're coming to that. Yeah.
I'm curious about the relationship between the different... So Kriya Yoga, it's got... overlaps partly with the...
It is completely overlapping. I mean, there are the three the same. Okay. What is Swadhyaya?
Study of spiritual scriptures.
Usually the study of spiritual scriptures. Vyasa says it's also chanting of the mantras. Repetitious chanting of mantra is also Swadhyaya. Because you learn more about yourself by chanting mantras. And of course, you understand yourself better if you know what it's all about. And that happens through the study of scriptures. Study of scriptures, what do we mean by the scriptures? Ancient literature, usually. We call it a scripture because it is supposed to contain the truth, basically. That's why we call it a scripture. And in our culture, you know, we have Vedas and Upanishads and Gita, Yoga Sutra, and all these ancient texts, they are considered to be part of the scriptures that we study. That's Swadhyaya.
But in general sense, it could be Bible or...
Anything. Bible or Jainism books or Buddhist literature. Anything that leads you to an understanding of the ultimate truth. That's called the ancient scripture, and the study of that is Swadhyaya. That's right.
Swadhyaya, I mean, literal meaning is self-study.
Self-study. Study of the self. Or self-study, it doesn't matter, yeah.
Studying, yeah.
Study
the self. That's the scripture.
Swadhyaya. And then Ishvara Pranidhana. What is Ishvara Pranidhana? Surrendering to Ishvara. Now we spent, you know, in our discussion here, we spent almost two full sessions on discussing the concept of Ishvara. That was in first chapter. Okay, first chapter has about 7 or 8 sutras related to Ishvara. And we spent a lot of time on that. We almost spent two full sessions on Ishvara. Again, very quick... recap of what the definition of Ishvara is in the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. First chapter. Ishvara. Definition of Ishvara. I'm talking of the Sanskrit phrase. The klesha karma vipakashayaihi aparamrishtaha Purusha Visheshaha Ishvaraha. It's a long sentence.
Okay.
Purusha Visheshaha. Yeah. Okay.
Special man.
So I'm just going to, because we are talking of Ishvara Pranidhana, I'm going to explain that very briefly now. Okay, so Klesha Karma Vipaka Ashayaihi. Okay, so We will understand these concepts a little bit later, okay? But these are the four terms used. Klesha is all the afflictions, all the pains and suffering, all the stresses and strains that we go through. That's Klesha. And second chapter is focused on Klesha. So we'll be discussing much more of the Kleshas, okay, in chat right now after this. But essentially, any kind of pain, suffering, affliction, stress and strain, anxiety, depression, everything that, it's all a part of Klesha, basically. Klesha, karma. What is karma? Cause and effect, basically. Karma is the cause and effect part of our life. You know, whatever we do, we reap the results of that based on our actions, etc. So that's karma theory. And that's also coming up in chapter 2. Okay? Karma theory. And then vipaka, fruition. So, whatever we do, it's going to have an effect. It's going to fructify, as they say in English, fructify. Yeah. From fruit. When I read the word fructify, I had to go and look up the dictionary because I didn't know any. Yeah, because... But that's the word they use, fructify. Some of these words are obscure.
So that's the karma may be the cause, but the fructify is the effect.
Right. Karma is all the... Karma is the actions that... See, there are... Okay, let me digress a little. There are three types of karma mentioned, right? Three types of karma. Does anybody remember the three categories? Sanchita karma, prarabdha karma, agami karma. Okay, three categories of karma. Okay, what is sanchita karma? Sanchita karma is the complete sort of bank balance of all the karmas that you have accumulated over the multiple lifetimes that you have lived, which is millions. Okay?
That's your treasury. That's your treasury.
That's the treasury. Okay, that's your complete total bank balance. Now, somebody somewhere, okay, who that is, we don't know. I mean, they call it Prajapati or what, I don't know. You know, different names are given. Somebody, at the time of your birth, they decide how much out of that sanchit karma you're going to be allocated for this life now, this lifespan, okay? That's called prarabdha karma. That will determine which family you'll be born into, what your height will be, what your structure will be like, what bone structure, how many fingers you will have, etc., etc. And what kind of mental attitude you will have. Things of all that nature are predetermined, many of these things are predetermined based on whatever decision is made. And this is all based on past karmas. Okay, that's called prarabdha karma. So there is sanchita karma and there is prarabdha karma. And then there is another thing called purushartha. Does everyone know what purushartha is?
Based on what you do.
What you do. Based on what you do, you will determine your future actions and your future results. And that's called agami karma. So based on purushartha, okay, based on purushartha, you will accrue future karma. That's called agami means future. Agami means future karma. So you have the ability to modify your own karma based on the future karma. Hello.
Hi. Sorry, I'm late. I was at the puja temple.
Oh, I see. You guys, okay. Sign in your name. What's your name?
Bhavani.
Bhavani, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Bhavani, are you Kailasam's daughter?
I am.
Ah, that's what I thought.
What is that?
Kailasam. Good, nice to meet you. You know, we have a study group at my house. We meet twice a month for Yoga Sutra study. And Kailasam was a prominent member of that group for a long time, for many years. That's her father.
Oh.
But he stopped coming after some time.
He doesn't travel very well.
Hmm?
He has a hard time traveling.
Driving. He doesn't like to drive much. That's what he told me. And he stopped coming, but an amazing person. That's all I can say. Absolutely amazing. Okay, so where was I?
Karma.
So we have Sanchita Karma, which is the whole collection of karma from multiple lifetimes. Then there is Prarabdha Karma, which is what is dished out to you during this lifetime, this lifespan. And finally, the Agami, which is the future karma that you create based on your Purushartha, based on your own actions in this lifetime. That's the Agami Karma. Okay. You know, an example they gave in some of the texts is, an archer, for example, has a, what is it called, quiver, right, in which there are lots of arrows, right? So that quiver is the Sanchit Karma, in a sense, because it contains all the arrows that you can possibly hold in it. And then you pull one arrow and then shoot it. The moment it is shot, that becomes Prarabdha Karma. Because that arrow, now you cannot control it. It's shot already. It's going to go in one somewhere and hit something, whatever. It's predetermined. That's it, based on how you shoot it. Okay? And then you have the Agami Karma, which is you decide now which arrow to pull out and where to shoot it next. Okay, so that's like a simple example of the three types of karma. Okay? So that's the Klesha Karma. That's the karma we're talking about. And once you shoot the arrow, or once you do the karma, it's going to bring about fruits. It's going to bring about some results. That's the fructification of the karma. That's called the vipaka. Vipaka. Paka means to ripen. Paka means to ripen. Vipaka is fully ripened. So when you when you put a fruit somewhere, it's going to ripen, you know, eventually. So fructify and ripen. That's vipaka. So klesha, karma, vipaka, ashayahi. Ashaya is what? Ashaya?
Intent.
Ashaya. What is container. Ashaya is container. Container. So, Patanjali uses the term karmashaya. Karmashaya. It's the whole bag full of karmas that we carry with us, basically. Because from that bag, which is the karmashaya, we are using some to live this life and then putting some more based on our Purushartha. So that's called the Karmashaya. Okay?
Ashaya also, is it like a residence?
Yes. Like, yes, okay. It is. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Ashaya is residence. Container, residence, you're right. Yep. Okay. So Karmashaya is the residence of karmas, in a sense. Okay. So, these four, klesha, karma, vipak, ashayahi, aparamrishtaha, totally untouched, uncluttered, untouched, unblemished by. Okay, by these four. Okay, and purusha visheshaha, it's a special purusha. Okay, now, you know, again we are getting into those ideas which take a longer time, but, you know, let's call it a special soul. Purusha is a soul, okay? So, that special kind of a soul, which is unblemished, uncluttered, or untouched by any of these four, it has no klesha, no suffering ever, completely clean, no karma, it doesn't accrue any actions, any karma. It does, obviously, because it doesn't do any karma, therefore no, there's no vipaka, there's no fructification, and there's no karmashaya, there is no collection of anything. That kind of a specialized soul has been given the name Ishvara by Patanjali. The purest of the pure entities that you can ever imagine, which is completely untouched by anything, never changes, never goes through any modification, never goes through any pain, suffering or any kind. That purest of pure souls has been given the name Ishvara or God by Patanjali.
I was going to ask, so it's, so you say Ishvara is God, because with all these things it seemed like...
No, I don't call Ishvara God, I'm calling Ishvara. I'm saying the closest translation of Ishvara in English can be termed as God. Okay, whatever you call God, that's your choice. Right. All I'm saying is Ishvara has been defined in a very precise manner by Patanjali. Ishvara.
But I was thinking of it as a still a purest of the soul, purest of the human being who we call Ishvara. But you are saying it's God, which I consider as not human being, but
it's not a human being. It's not a human being.
Ishvara
it's
is not. Not it's not like someone who has all these character. It's not the human who has all these characteristics, but it is.
It's a Purusha Vishesha. It's very.
When you say Purusha, okay.
Purusha Vishesha. Purusha. Okay. So again, the term Purusha. You have to understand. That's what I was trying to avoid.
In Sankhya,
there are two entities: Purusha and Prakriti. Okay. Purusha and Prakriti, that's Sankhya philosophy. That's why Patanjali's yoga is based on Sankhya philosophy, because it borrows all these terms. Purusha is, in terms of the human being, it's our soul. Okay, the soul which is not definable, which is not accessible through the five senses, etc., etc. That's the Purusha. And Prakriti is everything that is perceivable, everything that you can feel, touch, sense, perceive, that's all Prakriti. That's all this material being, including this whole body, mind, intellect, complex, that's all called the Prakriti.
Nature.
Prakriti includes everything. Not just nature, not just the forest and everything, but Prakriti. My body is Prakriti. My mind is Prakriti. My intellect, my thoughts, my emotions, everything is Prakriti, is a part of that. Okay? So you have to understand, that's why I'm saying, in vernacular language, the meaning changes. In Gujarati and Hindi, Prakriti means something different. In Sankhya philosophy, it has a very specific meaning. So you have to get away from that.
Depends on the context.
Yes. So Purusha is a soul which... as a soul which is now in our current state of being, it is completely messed up. That soul is messed up because of the ego. It messes it up. That's why it goes through klesha, karma, vipaka and all that. That soul goes through all that because that's how we get rebirth. Because in every birth we go through all these things, all these messy things of klesha, karma, suffering, pain, anxiety, etc., etc. That's because the soul is messed up. There is a special soul, Patanjali says, which he terms as Ishvara, which never gets messed up. It doesn't go through any of this. Beyond that, it's up to you how you want to imagine that. He doesn't say anything else. It's not an easy concept, but he has given us a concept. We'll work with that. All right? So that's the definition of Ishvara, and because it's such a special Purusha, because it's a very special being, he says develop a sense of devotion to that entity. That's called Ishvara Pranidhana. That's the term he uses here, Ishvara Pranidhana. So then he said, this practice of these three, tapas, swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhana, they constitute this thing called Kriya Yoga. Okay? Now the commentators, you know, the most prominent commentator on Yoga Sutra is Vyasa, V-Y-A-S-A. Okay? He's the most authoritative commentator on the Yoga Sutras. So he says that, look, in chapter 1 we were told that through Abhyasa and Vairagya we can attain the objective of yoga. But according to Vyasa, he says that that applies to a person who's already up there. His mind is already somewhat controlled and he can practice Vairagya more easily, therefore he can attain the goals of yoga. So he calls him the Uttama Adhikari. That's the category he put, Vyasa. Uttama Adhikari means the highest level of person who is qualified, highest qualification to attain the objective of yoga. Then there are other categories of Adhikari. Adhikari is a qualified person. The middle one, Madhyama, and Adhama, lowest one. Okay, so he says for the other people who are not at that level, which is elevated enough to just use Abhyasa and Vairagya and get there, you have to apply, you start with this Kriya Yoga. Okay, and through this practice of Kriya Yoga you can do things, and the next sutra will tell you why we practice Kriya Yoga. Okay, what does it do to us? Okay. So this is the definition of Kriya Yoga, but Patanjali, he doesn't tell you why he is defining all this like this. Vyasa says that for the highest qualified person, you use Abhyasa and Vairagya, which was in chapter 1, and then you go to chapter 2 and start studying these things, and that applies to almost everybody else, basically. Okay? So for the middle one, this Kriya Yoga, and for the lowest Adhikari, the people like, you know, for us, we have to go through all the eight limbs of yoga. That's for the lowest person. Okay? Alright? That's how he defines these things. So everyone got that? Tapas Swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhana. So let's read through these notes that I have made. So tapas is related to will, karma yoga. So there are three yogas. Remember in the Gita, this is somebody who is coming from the Gita's background. You know, he has related these three to the three types of yoga. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. Those are the three kinds of activities you can go through, right? Now, the tapas is the relation related to will or karma yoga, sturdy, self-discipline, mental, moral, and physical, to eradicate impurities caused by karma, klesha, and vasana. Impurities caused by karma, klesha, and vasana. Does everyone know these terms? Karma, we know that, right? Klesha, we are going to talk about that. Klesha is all the suffering and all the pain and afflictions that we have. And what is vasana?
Desires.
Vasana is the hidden desires. Hidden. The English word they use always is propensities. Vasana is the hidden propensities that we have deep within our subconscious levels. So there are two terms used, samskara and vasana. Usually, you know, for all the stuff that is hidden in our mind, there are actually three terms used. One is memory or smriti. So there are three things, smriti, samskara, and vasana. There are subtle differences between these three. And it might be worthwhile at least give you my thoughts on these three, okay? Smriti or the memory is the pure memory of something. Okay? Samskara is when you have added some salt and pepper to their memory and then made some judgment. Okay, and that becomes samskara. Okay, you are sitting here in this meeting and you're listening to me on a such and such date. There were, you know, 5 or 7 people here. That's all smriti. Okay, and when you go home, you put a judgment on it. I liked it, I hated it. I would never do that. Okay, so that's called samskara. And this emphasis that I'm going to never do it again, that's vasana, that's desire. Okay? So samskara is putting some salt and pepper around the memory and then putting a desire onto it, that's vasana. You got it? Just a subtle difference between these three. So this is Vyasa's view that kriya, the tapas will eradicate impurities caused by karma, klesha and vasana. Okay, so that's tapas. What is swadhyaya? It is related to the intellect, so it becomes jnana yoga in that sense. Swadhyaya is the study of the self or chanting of mantras. That's what Vyasa says. Study of the scriptures. And again, we talked about the scriptures being all these ancient texts which are supposedly the containers of truth. And Ishvara Pranidhana related to emotions or Bhakti Yoga, doing all actions as offering to Ishvara and renouncing the fruits of action. So there are two things here. Okay? Whatever we do, okay, first of all, it's the where is the inspiration coming from? What they say is, what we do, whatever action we do, it's the inspiration that we are getting through Ishvara. Okay? And then, whatever is the outcome of our actions, we are offering that as a offering to Ishvara. Okay? That means we are not expecting anything from any actions. And whatever comes out as a result of our action, we offer that back as a service to Ishvara. That's the ultimate form of Ishvara, Pranidhana, or surrender to Ishvara. Okay? Now, again, a couple of notes here in chapter 1. Practice and Vairagya were described for one who has good control over the mind due to the predominance of sattva guna. So the concepts in chapter 1 were applicable mostly to a person who has dominance of sattva guna. But for people like us who are dominated by rajas and tamas, he says in chapter 2, kriya yoga is for those whose minds are outwardly focused as they are dominated by rajas and tamas. Okay, this is all Vyasa's comments. Okay, next sutra, number 2.
So the third thing was, there was tapa, swadhyay, which was the third thing?
Ishvara Pranidhana. Yeah. Tapa, swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhana. Okay. Now, this one, let's break this up. Samadhi, Bhavanarthaha, Klesha, Tanukaranarthacha. Tanukaranarthascha. Okay. So, Samadhi Bhavana, Arthaha. I'm breaking in different ways so that you can understand the words. And then klesha, tanukarana, arthaha, cha. You can break that into these different ways. Okay. So kriya yoga, what's the purpose of kriya? That's what it says. What's the purpose of kriya yoga? Okay. So the first purpose is samadhi bhavana artha. Artha means the purpose. Artha means the purpose. Okay, so the first purpose, he says, is to develop a bhavana or a feeling or an attitude or the quality of samadhi. Okay, samadhi bhavana artha. Okay, so the first purpose of Kriya Yoga is to move you towards samadhi. Does everyone know the concept of samadhi?
Eighth limbs of yoga.
The final limb of yoga is samadhi, okay, which is the ultimate state of the mind where you are completely absorbed in your own mind, basically in your own thought process. One single object. That's called the samadhi. So the goal of yoga is to attain samadhi eventually. That's why he says that you are, by practicing Kriya Yoga, you are going in that direction. Purpose of Kriya Yoga is to attain samadhi bhavana. Bhavana also means creation or making something, becoming something. Okay, bhu. So samadhi bhavana. Bhavana also means attitude or feeling. There are different meanings depending on the context. Okay. Then klesha. Again, we are coming to the concept klesha. Kleshas are defined right in the next sutra. All the afflictions, pain, suffering, all the negative stuff that goes on. Tanu. What is tanu? Diminish. Tanu means to narrow something down, diminish something, reduce something. Tanu. You know, some women are named Tanu, right?
Tanvi.
Tanvi or Tanu, okay. What does that mean? Literally, one with a narrow waist. That's the origin of this. Tanu. Tanu means narrow, thin, small, diminished. Okay.
Tan is body.
Tan is body, yes. Tanu is one who has a very narrow body. Tanvi is the same thing, one with a very narrow body. So a beautiful woman is called Tanu, that's it. Tanu Shri, some of the word. So here we are talking of the diminishing of the kleshas. So how do you diminish the kleshas? That's the purpose of Kriya Yoga, alright? So that's the whole thing about Kriya Yoga. It allows you to move towards samadhi. And it diminishes your kleshas. It reduces your kleshas. Okay. Minimize obstacles. I don't like these translations very much. Kleshas are not obstacles. That's... Anyway. Okay. So... this is just a pictorial view that, you know, I have discussed earlier also. It's just how the mind functions. There are four functions of the mind: ego, memory, the cognitive mind, and the intellect. So I've kind of, you know, projected the four functions of the mind. So here, this is the mind, the cognitive mind, which is connected to the five senses, and there are the organs of action. Okay? And then it's connected to the intellect. Intellect is connected to the memory. Ego is connected to the memory. And this is the soul, or the pure entity, which is called the Purusha, or the seer. Okay? So this is how the mind functions. And when we practice Kriya Yoga, what it says is that the wisdom or the buddhi or the intellect is disengaged from the five kleshas, because now you have attained that purity of the mind, so you are no more connected with the kleshas. And discriminating wisdom arises, and awareness of the separation between self and ego is obtained. So we are, you know, these are the concepts which are going to come over and over again in yoga, so we'll keep talking about them. All right? So this is what Kriya Yoga does. All right. Now we are moving on to the concept of the five kleshas. Okay. What are the five kleshas? So let's enumerate the five kleshas. Avidya. So first one is avidya. Asmita. Raga. Dvesha. Abhinivesha. Kleshaha. So avidya. Let's do it one more time. Avidya. Asmita. Raga. Dvesha. Abhinivesha. These are the five kleshaha. All right. So, that's the root cause of all our suffering, all our pain, afflictions, everything that goes on in the mind. Avidya. What's avidya?
Ignorance.
What is vidya?
Knowledge.
Knowledge. Pure understanding of things there is vidya. Avidya is lack of that knowledge. So, the literal meaning of avidya is lack of knowledge. But usually translated as ignorance. Okay? But there might be a subtle difference between these two.
What was that? Didn't you translate wrong knowledge as avidya?
No, that's viparyaya. That was the five vrittis. So that was pramana, viparyaya, vikalpa, etc. Those are the... Avidya is lack of knowledge. Lack of proper discriminatory wisdom. That's avidya. Okay. What is asmita? Ego. Asmita is ego. Raga. Likes. You know, raga is like, if you like something strongly, that's raga. And dvesha, dislike something, hatred for something. And abhinivesha. Abhinivesha is?
So dvesha is not jealousy.
It's part of that, yeah. It's part of that. Dislike, jealousy, everything. Again, depending on the context, meaning will change. But yeah, it's all same shades of, different shades of meaning.
Satchidananda says it's clinging to bodily life.
Clinging to bodily life. Abhinivesha.
We all do that.
What?
We are doing that. We are all clinging to bodily life. We have to,
But that's attachment to bodily life. Basically what it means is fear of death.
Okay.
Fear of death is abhinivesha. Okay. I think the literal meaning of abhinivesh is come from vish. Vish dhatu. You know, vish is to enter something. Nivesh is to live somewhere. Abhinivesh is to have the desire for maintaining status quo. That's the very literal meaning of abhinivesha. Maintaining status quo, not moving. So I have this body, I don't want to get rid of this body now. Stay where I am, and you know, I don't want to lose this body. So that's abhinivesha. So fear of death, basically. That's abhinivesha. So what is avidya? What are we talking about in terms of vidya and avidya here? What's the core of that statement? See, remember we said the Sankhya philosophy says there are two entities, Purusha and Prakriti. Now in our current state of being, this Purusha is completely entangled with the ego. Okay? And that's avidya. We do not know that our true identity is is this Purusha or the pure soul, we are totally entangled by the ego, entangled with the ego, and that is avidya. That's the pure ignorance that we have, lack of knowledge. We don't have the knowledge that, look, I am pure soul, I am nothing else but that. But right now I'm thinking I'm the ego, therefore I'm judging things, I'm worrying about things, I have raga and dvesha and all that stuff. So that's the whole meaning of this avidya.
So we can say it's lack of knowledge of Ishvara?
Lack of knowledge of my true being, which is Purusha. Purusha, not Ishvara. Ishvara comes later, yeah. Ishvara is one of the techniques to get there, if you recognize that.
It is. So it's still self-identity.
Self. It's the pure self. That's Purusha. Okay? Purusha is the pure self, pure ego. Again, don't get the meaning of Purusha as the human, as the male human being.
No.
That's not what it is here. That's again in our vernacular Hindi language, you know, in Gujarati we say Purusha means the male human being. That's not what it is here. Okay.
So I think between Hinduism and Buddhism, here we have this self-identification and things. I mean, in Buddhism, they don't have that self-identity.
That's what I've heard. Yes. I don't know much about Buddhism, but they say there's no soul.
They do soul and dharma.
No, they say there's no soul.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know much about Buddhism, so let's not. If you know something, you can share with us, but I don't know anything about Buddhism.
They give more importance to dharma and the misery of the world and things like that.
Well, misery is here also. That's klesha. Klesha is misery. So Patanjali also talks about misery.
Yeah, no, we do have dharma. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So, so what happens is that when avidya, when we don't have this knowledge, when we don't have the proper understanding of our true identity, what happens? Aspita takes over. Ego takes over. Because now the ego becomes very dominant. And like I gave the example in our morning class also, the ego takes over and it starts making decisions on our behalf. Okay, and those decisions are always flawed, because ego always likes to put its own stuff in there, likes and dislikes. Okay, ego is not going to decide based on what is good for us, but it's going to decide what is pleasant for me. You know, there are two terms used in the Upanishads. In one of the Kathopanishad uses two terms, Prayas and Shreyas. Anybody heard those terms? Prayas and Shreyas. Prayaha, Shreyaha. Prayaha and Prayas is something that I like, that is pleasant to me. Shreyas is something that is good for me. Okay? So what the Kathopanishad says, that you have to learn how to distinguish between these two and pick only the Shreyas for yourself, not the Prayas.
So something that you have to work for.
No, something that is desirable for you.
So in your life, you don't share like or dislike? In your life, you should not?
You should not have strong likes and dislikes, no. No raga and dvesha.
You cannot share?
Share.
Means,
what do you mean share?
Share means something I don't like, I like, or something like this.
What do you mean share?
Means, I don't contribute or talk or something.
Share with others.
Right.
Your feelings.
No, give me an example. I'm not sure I get what
means,
you're saying.
You are in group and you are saying that I don't like it.
Do I like what?
I like this. Whatever talk is or whatever they are doing and whatever subject is going on, you can say I like it or I didn't like it.
She's saying,
I'm not sure.
I don't like. I'm just giving something, whether it's
whatever
an object
it
or behavior
or
what.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Can you share that?
Absolutely.
Share
you can say that. You can say you don't like something, okay? But the whole idea is that when you make a decision, whether it is based on your likes and dislikes, or whether it is based on the purity of the entity, of whatever it is. Okay? So, you know, there's this concept of ego and intellect. Ego and the intellect, that's what we have been talking about. The ego will decide based on what it likes. And I gave the example of a cake in one of my classes, you know, that, you know, even though we have been diagnosed with a lot of problems because of cholesterol, we still like to eat cake. And that's raga. That's the attachment or the attraction for a piece of cake that we have developed. Taste. Tongue. Okay? So when time comes to eat the cake, okay, the ego says, it's only one piece of cake, it's not going to harm anybody. Nobody has been killed by one piece of cake, right? So let's go and eat it. But if it were left for the intellect would say, look, my doctor says I have high cholesterol, I'm not supposed to eat this. Let me not do it. So the intellect is not going to be based on likes and dislikes. That's what I mean by that like and dislike. Because I've attached so much liking to it, therefore my ego says, let's grab it. Right? Now, you know, if you decide, for example, there is a certain food that you like, and there's another piece of food that you don't like, and it's perfectly okay to label them as, you know, like or dislike, because they are not going to harm you. They are both, it's okay. So, for example, even the intellect can base its decision based on likes and dislikes. Intellect can. But as long as the decision is made by the intellect, it's okay. That's the whole point I'm making. Okay, you like this talk, for example, right? Is that what you're saying? You are sitting in this discussion.
But the cake thing is,
yeah.
You liked it, but you should not eat.
Right.
So it's not, you didn't like it. You like it.
Yes.
So it's a different story, but I'm saying that sometimes some thoughts is going on, some activity is going on, mm-hmm. and you said that I don't like it.
Right.
Or I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different opinion. Different
right. People. Again, is that coming from the intellect? That's a very hard decision to make. Is it coming from the intellect or is it coming from the ego? That's the point. And so we have to start distinguishing between those two.
Yeah, sometimes it's ego also. But right. Still, you didn't say that is you didn't like it. Yes, even though it's right, but you didn't like it. Something like that.
Right. That's ego. That's ego, right? If it is right and you didn't like it, that's ego.
It's right for them, but it's not right for me. Something like that.
But who decides that? Whether it's your intellect or your ego? We're not talking of others. Your own intellect or the ego.
Depends on the knowledge.
That's right. Yeah. Now you got the point. Depends on the knowledge, depends on your understanding. And understanding comes from all the studies, swadhyaya and all that. That's the whole, now you got the point now. So you have to do a lot of swadhyaya, study of the scriptures, study of the self, to find out what is desirable and what is not desirable. My ego might say it is desirable for me, whereas actually it may not be. I don't know. And that's why we make all these mistakes in life.
In this whole equation, you are putting yourself outside of this process. You know, even mind, right? I mean, there are all these things going on. But you, as a person, whoever you are, is different than your mind. Mind has ego, intellect, all those kind of things. It is going on. But you are different.
You're separate.
Yeah. And that soul or whatever, right?
That separate is the soul. That's the concept.
That's not shown in your diagram.
No, it is shown in the diagram.
But it's not ultimately dictating. Because
I've shown this soul.
Right and wrong.
Right.
Yes,
right and
all the logic says something, but
right and wrong is determined by the intellect. That's the intellect here. Soul is just the observer. They say soul is the observer. It's the seer. It's the bhokta also in some sense. It's being presented everything. That's it. The whole purpose of the soul is to give you the wisdom, to give you the light which will shine your wisdom. It's a very difficult concept. I can tell you this. I've been studying it for 22 years now, and I'm not sure I can say that I'm clear on this concept.
Because what I was thinking was soul and mind are separate. And
yes.
We don't want mind to make all the decisions.
We want the intellect to make the decision, not the mind. Is
I consider intellect as part of the mind.
Well, you know, for our purposes, what we're saying is, let's think of the whole complex as being of these four components, four functions. It'll be easier to understand the functions then. If you club everything as to
more philosophical concept.
Not philosophical. It's a practical concept. This is not philosophical.
Between the soul and the mind.
Yes, that's a philosophical concept. That's hard.
So, I have a question about the knowledge part of this sutra. In some other traditions, they believe that you have a light or a knowledge inside you already, and that your human experiences kind of pushed it down. Are you saying here that we... And what you're trying to explain here, do you have the knowledge and you've suppressed it like these other traditions, or you never had it to begin with at all?
No, you're right.
Yeah, I think he's saying what you're saying.
What you're saying is right.
Okay.
We have, through our own experiences, we have suppressed it.
Okay.
Patanjali calls there's a word that Patanjali uses in Sanskrit for that inborn, innate knowledge that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it prajna in Sanskrit. P-R-A-J-N-A, prajna. Yeah. So that's the term he uses, and he has used that in the first chapter quite a bit, prajna. That's the innate inner wisdom that we already have. But that gets clouded by what you were saying as our own experiences, our own vasanas and impressions in our mind, they get clouded. So our ego takes over. It does not allow us to peek into that wisdom. That's what happens. It's the same concept. Patanjali
that
has.
Is connected with your soul. So when you are.
That's not connected with the soul. It gets its light of wisdom from the soul. That's the connection. They're not physically co-joined.
Right.
But they have close proximity to each other. And it is that close proximity which allows us to function. If that's what you mean.
Right. What I'm saying is, just because the knowledge or whatever person has nothing to do with his age, because some people, they just happen to born in your family or whatever. That doesn't mean they are totally ignorant of things like that. They come up, they have their knowledge. She said it may be suppressed because the way we are treating them,
Yes, you're right. That's true, yeah.
We're not aware.
Yes.
Lost awareness completely.
Yes. Yeah. So we have avidya, which is the lack of proper understanding of the true nature of our being, which results in the asmita or the ego being dominant. And because of the ego, we have these likes and dislikes. We like something, we dislike something, we have raga and dvesha, we put labels on everything. Everything gets labeled. You meet a person for the first time, you put a label on the person. Good, bad, ugly, handsome, everything. And we start judging them based on their appearance, based on their what they wear and stuff like that, which has no meaning in reality. That's not the reality. So raga and dvesha. And that raga and dvesha ultimately leads to a fear of loss. Fear of loss. That's the abhinivesha. And fear of the loss of life is the ultimate fear that we have. Final fear is the loss of life.
Hmm? fear of life, mm-hmm. everyone is experiencing when death is near?
Yeah. I mean, there is fear of life all the time. You know, we are afraid of death all the time in life.
Because of lack of knowledge.
Even though invite death, still there fear?
You tell me. Are you afraid of death or no?
Right now, I don't.
No, that's okay, you know, but given a situation...
I heard that when people is kind of about to die, dying,
yeah.
the fear is coming more.
Yeah, of course. And you're right, yes.
And that's what I'm hearing. So I'm saying that everyone is experiencing
sure,
that,
Even
though they invite the death, means kind of death is coming, that's okay.
There's a sutra coming here which says that even the most wise people, they are afraid of death. The next sutra says even the wisest of wise, they are afraid of death. They are afflicted with abhinivesha.
So how this remove? How you can
through vidya, through knowledge. Once we gain the knowledge, then we have no fear. Once we gain the knowledge that we are pure soul, that we are not just this physical body and the ego, that knowledge will eliminate all fear of any kind.
So that means everyone is not experiencing, only some people is experiencing about the fear.
No, fear everyone experiences unless you are enlightened.
Yeah.
Unless you have reached that state of enlightenment, always everyone is going to be fearful of something or the other.
Even though they are saying it's peaceful death, that doesn't mean that they don't feel fear. This kind of individual experience, we never know, right?
Yes. It's all very individual, Yeah, you're right. It's very individual. But what I'm saying is, unless you have attained the state of enlightenment, which is the pure knowledge and understanding of what my true identity is, unless we do that, we are going to be always, we have some fear. Whether we are close to death, or even today, if you're not close to death, I'm afraid of something else. You know, people put all kinds of fences around their house, all kinds of alarm systems, yes, that, you know, everything is because of fear.
It's kind of anxiety.
Fear, anxiety, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yes, well, you're saying that if you know Purusha, your true self, your soul, and are aware, then you have no fears.
Then we have no fears.
Then we have no fears.
Yes. That's
but
very
really
true.
Really understanding what that means.
That itself is a long...
That itself is like huge.
That's huge.
It's like beyond anything we can name or conceptualize.
That's right.
We can only talk about it and kind of point to it and
when you think
attempt
more,
to grasp it.
I think when you think more in deep, then it comes. But if you ignore this, then the fear is not
there. All these raga, dvesha, everything all those are probably material things. And, you know, that's what you're worried about, losing.
Yeah.
And that's what creates the fear.
That's right.
What happens if I lose my house or my this?
Yeah.
But if that does not matter, if you get...
wisdom.
wisdom of that, then you would not fear death either.
Right. You got it. Very good. Yeah. That's what it is. Okay, now it's coming to the definition of each individual kleshas. Oh, okay. So let's do this one now, number 4. So let's read the Sanskrit first. Avidya, kshetram. Uttaresham prasapta tanu vichinna udaranam. Okay, so one more time. Avidya kshetram uttaresham prasupta tanu vichinna udaranam. All right. What does all this mean now? He says, avidya, which is the number one klesha. Remember we talked about avidya, asmita and all that. Avidya, he says, is the kshetram, or the kind of the growing field for Uttaresham, the one that follow. What are the ones that follow? All the other four. So, in a sense, what he's saying is that avidya is the mother of all these kleshas. Okay? Avidya is the root cause of all these kleshas that follow avidya, which are the four others, which is asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha. So avidya is the root cause of all these four that follow. Uttaresha means that follow. Okay? And these kleshas that follow, they can be in any of these states of prasupta, tanu, vichinna, or udara. Those are the four states of the kleshas that follow. What do they mean now? What does prasupta mean?
Dormant,
completely dormant, completely non-active. They are subdued at the deepest subconscious levels. They are there, but they are very subdued. So you like something, raga for something, for example, you like a piece of cake, or you like some jewelry or something, but it may be hidden deep and see in your subconscious level. It will come up only when there is a trigger of some kind. It rises up. That's very deep sleep, in a state of sleep. That's called prasupta. What is tanu? Tanu means diminished. That is a good one.
You said it recently.
Yes, yes. Narrow. Diminished. Okay, tanu. So that means they are there, but in a diminished state. Tanu. What is vichinna?
Intercepted,
that means on and off. They kind of toggle between being there and being not there.
Scattered.
Vichinna is also means scattered, you're right. It means scattered also, but
it's
here...
Yeah.
Yes, but here I think the vichinna has been given the meaning, kind of toggling between on and off. It's like an on and off switch. Okay? Binary system, one and two. Zero and one, or whatever. Yes. Yeah. And then, and udara means really active at this time. Udara means active. They're asserting their presence on us. All right? So if I have a liking for somebody, you know, it's very strong in my mind. I like this person, for example, you know. Very strong in my mind. But at that time, that becomes udara. Okay? So he says, all these kleshas from asmita down, you know, four kleshas, uttaresham, these that follow avidya, those four kleshas can be in any of these four states. Avidya is always present because it's the root cause. It's not in the prasupta state, it's not in the deep sleep state. It cannot be. It's active all the time. It's always active. Avidya is always active, but the other four can be in any one of these four categories of stages. Yeah, I think we are ready to finish also. My voice, like I said, you know, every time, even though the class is set for 2 hours, almost every class, after about an hour and 45 minutes, my voice gives up. So I always stop a little bit earlier than a full 2 hours. Yeah, I keep drinking water, but somehow my stamina gives up after about an hour.
You've also been up since.
Yeah,
you're sitting in the morning.
Maybe you can do something like 15 minutes, people can participate.
Well, this is participatory. We are all discussing anyway. We're discussing it. Yeah. No, Saturday is usually a big day for me because I wake up at 4, I did my 6 o'clock class in the morning, then 10 o'clock class in the morning, you know, so keep talking constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you're going home and going to bed?
You
have?
Oh my God.
She's in the morning class.
And then I went to the gym for an hour and a half.
Oh, my hour and a half.
Exhausted. You're young. Okay, so this is interesting stuff. You know, all these kleshas. That's, you know, the modern term for kleshas is stress, basically. You can just club them in all under same stress. Okay. So this is okay that, you know, we have avidya, which is the root cause. It's the main field, kshetram, for everything that follows. Okay. Avidya being the breeding ground for the others cannot be in the dormant state. I just mentioned that, okay? A dormant klesha can germinate when a suitable trigger is present. Feeble practice of Kriya Yoga helps in thinning the active kleshas. That's the tanu karana. Remember we said tanu karana, the practice of Kriya Yoga will make these kleshas feeble. Intercepted in this state, kleshas appear and disappear. It's, like I said, it's the on and off state. When klesha of attachment is present, aversion is absent at the time. It can appear, reappear at another time, but not at the same time as attachment. So they are always non-coexistent. Active or sustained in this state, kleshas actually exert influence on the mind at a given time. For example, at the time of anger, aversion is active and attachment is hidden. These are just simple examples to explain what these differences are. Okay?
That's why we say people change.
Right.
Not because after you've something, it may be there.
Yeah,
nature,
something,
but you know, it just something, doesn't show up.
Yes,
after 20 years,
something hidden in their subconscious level that shows up, they suddenly change. We always, yeah, you're right. We used to tell people, you changed.
We didn't know this was in you, but
right.
It was always there. It just, yeah.
It just, yeah. Trigger, you know, the appropriate trigger can bring up stuff inside us. Yes. You're right. We all go through that.